This episode is presented by Invest Puerto Rico. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place.
Hello, and welcome back to Equity, a podcast about the business of startups where we unpack the numbers and nuance behind the headlines. Today is April 26, 2024. I'm Marianne Azevedo, and joining me is senior TechCrunch reporter Alex Wilhelm. We're switching things up a little bit this week because instead of being in his usual recording space, Alex is coming to us live from TechCrunch's early stage event in Boston. How's it going over there, Alex?
Well, my voice is shot. I am over-caffeinated because we invested in three different espresso stations here at the venue, and I was 20 minutes late because it turns out I can't read a spreadsheet and properly schedule a recording time for when I'm off stage, and so we were supposed to start when I was still on stage. But apart from that, Marianne, everything's going pretty darn good.
Awesome. Glad you could still make it on. That's the most important thing. Before we get to the show rundown, I want to ask our listeners, please don't forget to rate and review us on the Apple Pods, Spotify, or whatever your preferred pod streamer is. We really appreciate it. Now, today on the show, we're going to talk about a variety of things, including Rubrik's IPO, Pomelo's latest fundraise, the TikTok ban, and what happened at TechCrunch early stage. So, Alex, tell us all about Rubrik.
Yeah. So this is the fourth major technology IPO that we've seen this year. And if you recall, we saw Reddit and then Astera Labs. And then we recently saw another company go out. And finally, we have gotten our way to Rubrik. It's the company that I have been most interested in how it will price and trade. And the company actually managed to price above its range at $32 per share.
Wow.
And then it debuted at 38. So Marianne, from a very high level, I will call this one a roaring success. And given the circumstances, I'm a little surprised.
Are you surprised? What were you expecting?
I mean, less, much less.
Really?
Because if I recall, at the company's original $28 to $31 per share price range, it was going to be worth, I think, like $5.5, $5.6 billion. So the fact that it priced above that and then went higher means that its valuation is going to be comfortably north of $6 billion now. And it is a company that is only growing so quickly, which is a polite way of saying not very fast in aggregate. Mm-hmm. It does have a growth business in its cloud subscription model, but that's still not all of its revenue. And it's very unprofitable. So to me, looking at this company, I was kind of like, okay, this is a little aggressive. I thought it was only going to be the slam dunks that were going to go out. But instead, Rubrik, I mean, golly gee, had a great pricing and trading. So to me, an incredibly bullish sign. And I don't mean to take away from Rubrik. Well done. Congratulations on the fundraise. Huzzah. I just didn't expect that many people to show up to the party, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, when you look at the numbers, disclosing a loss of $354 million on revenue of $628 million earlier this year. And actually, it's a bigger loss than the year prior. It was $278 million last year and revenue was $600 million. So a lot more of a loss, a little bit more revenue. I can see why you're a bit surprised.
Yes, but inside of that very small gain from 600 to 628 million in revenue year to year, and it's a fiscal year, so it's January 31, then 12 months from there, but that's a small detail. The thing is, they've been transitioning from some license revenue to subscription revenue. And so whenever you do that, your overall growth rate goes down a little bit as you swap essentially one-time revenue for longer-term recurring revenue. And so the slowdown is not an enormous shock. The fact that it only grew by, that's almost 30 out of 600, so a little bit less than 5% year over year, you know, that's just not much. But it seems that investors saw the business and said, look, we don't care about that. We care about the growth in your cloud subscription annual recurring revenue, and we're going to value you based on that, and we're going to give you a relatively optimistic multiple. What more could you ask for?
Like, yeah.
That's great freaking news.
It is. It's good for them. We'll see how this plays out long term, though. Interestingly, Lightspeed Venture Partners owned 23.9% of Rubrik's shares prior to the IPO. Greylock, 12.2%.
So if it was, let's just call it 6 billion for the sake of round numbers, and 23.9% is basically a quarter. And so that means about 1.5 billion to Lightspeed, right?
Yeah, something like that.
I think we often talk about valuation and percentage ownership, but we don't actually multiply them together to get
figure out
the
numbers, like dollar figures. Yeah.
Right. So for all the money Lightspeed put into this company, if it sold its shares, or it does in the near future, about $1.4 billion, $1.5 billion, I mean, that's a check.
Yeah, I would say so.
Greylock, 12.2% less, about half, but still, it's hundreds of millions of dollars to those investors. So if you are an LP in Greylock or Lightspeed, congratulations, you have a check coming. Well done.
Having a good day, Lightspeed and Greylock LPs.
Of which I am not.
Yeah, right. Do you think this is a sign of an IPO market rebound? I mean, this is the fourth venture-backed company to go public in recent months.
You know, Marianne, I legitimately struggle to find a way to not answer that in the affirmative. Like, there's nothing here that makes me doubt that this is a bullish sign. And yes, I have spent most of today bopping around this venue in Boston, talking to people and drinking espressos. But I still can't think of anything about this that feels negative. The price is good. The pricing was good. The trading was good. You know, it's the fourth IPO in a row that we've seen this year that's priced well and traded well. If you're a unicorn founder and you're sitting there on, you know, I don't know, between 90 and 150 million in ARR, and you're not working towards getting your paperwork in place right now, you're really taking a bet that things are going to be a lot better in the future. And I'm not sure that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's got to be a lot of startups out there that aren't losing so much money and probably aren't too far behind revenue wise. So maybe this will kind of give them some more confidence.
You know, it's almost like we've had a couple of these in the news lately, perhaps Rippling, Gusto, Deal, Remote. I mean, there's a bunch of companies right now that have the numbers and have the, I would say, lack of losses to ship an S1 and really make my next week great. So I think that if they don't file next week, Marianne, we should understand that as not indication that they're business cowards who are afraid to visit the public markets. Instead, they're TechCrunch haters who don't want us to have a good time, which is different.
Don't take it personally.
Watch me.
Oh, well. So let's next talk about my deal of the week, a startup called Pomelo. And you know, there's a couple of fintechs out there with this exact name. So this is not to be confused with an Argentinian fintech I covered in the past. This one is US based. However, it's mostly right now operating in the Philippines.
Okay.
So what the company does is a little different. That's why I wrote about it. I have not heard of this before. They are a self-described send now, pay later company. And essentially they offer credit to people here in the US to be able to send money back to the Philippines while at the same time building their credit. So for example, as a user, you can set up an account. It comes with credit cards. You can, as the creator of the account, you can set limits, pause cards, view spending habits. And then you can send cash in the form of credit to family members back in the Philippines. And that way they're helping the people here build their credit. And then they're saying this way that it's just a more secure way to transfer, like monitor where the money is actually going. Cause you can even see the spending habits, like where the money's being spent. So if you're worried about, say, your brother or sister back home taking that money and spending it on video games, you can see where it's actually going.
Well, I now see what you think of my hobbies. Okay, but Marianne, I want to drill down on the model here because I think that I understand and I think it's actually brilliant. So I am a person in the US. I want to send money to, I don't know, family or friends in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. I can go to a wire transfer service or I can use Wise, whatever. I could send the money that I have. Or I could go through Pomelo and say, let's send my sister Marianne in the Philippines 100 USD. And then I effectively owe them that Pomelo that $100 after they send it. Therefore, I've engendered a debt, which I can then pay with the $100 I was going to send anyways. And therefore, I've dealt with debt in a positive fashion. Credit score goes up. Everyone's happy. The only risk here is really that Pomelo sends money and then doesn't get paid. But I presume they have a model for that. So they've essentially just turned remittances into a way to build domestic credit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it is super interesting. They're looking to expand to Mexico. They've added new payment options so that users can also send funds through something called GCash. It's like an e-wallet in the Philippines, similar to Venmo as well. And it just raised a pretty decent Series A round, $35 million, led by Vi Capital, which is a Dubai venture firm that's pretty secretive and I think backed Elon in his purchase of X. And then Founders Fund and A-Star, is it A? Asterisk? What is this?
A-Prime, I think.
Oh, A-Prime Capital. I'm sorry, I didn't figure that out before we started recording. They also participated in the round. So 35 million Series A, nothing to sneeze at in this market. It was one of Keith Raboy's last deals before leaving Founders Fund.
Yeah, I really think this is cool. I think this is a super cool model. And especially if they apply it to countries like Mexico, there are lots of folks in the United States who could do well to have, you know, a boost to their credit score. It's a pretty common ask amongst everybody. And remittances between the US and Mexico are incredibly common, and it's a big business. And so if there's a way to kind of bring the two together, it's one of those times, Mary, and that we love to talk about, because it's a cool business opportunity and it could help people just live better lives. So it's kind of it feels like a win-win.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I don't want to get too detailed into the nitty gritty, but they do offer unsecured credit lines or secured credit lines, depending, you know, on the customer and their underwriting criteria. One other quick note, they don't charge interest, but they will charge a late fee if someone doesn't pay them back. So just wanted to point that out. It mostly makes money through interchange revenue, and then foreign exchange is a smaller component.
Because they have cards in the Philippine market, so therefore they make money off the... Oh, yeah, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. No, I think this is just super cool. And Marianne, if I may be so bold as to point out something in your niche, it's a cool fintech deal. You know, we've been a little bit down on fintech. Here's a cool one.
It's a cool one. And as Christine Hall recently reported, cross-border fintech is pretty hot right now. When YC did their demo days a couple of weeks back, that was a common theme that she saw. There were several startups in that cohort focused on cross-border fintech. And we've even written about another doing a similar thing called Alza that helps various banking needs of Latin or Central Americans, doing kind of a similar thing, but with a debit card. So anyway, hot space, fun deal. I enjoyed it. On that note, after the break, we are going to talk about TikTok and what could happen to it here in the US if it doesn't find a buyer.
What's next in tech? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's an innovations paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the US. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/TechCrunch.
So, Marianne, Congress is famous for being a little bit slow, but then suddenly things happen and they shake loose. And I feel like we went from the House passing its TikTok divest or ban bill, then nothing happened for a while, and then suddenly, boom, here we are. It's passed and gone through the president. It's been a whirlwind week, but the gist seems to be that TikTok has 9 months plus a grace period to divest from ByteDance or face a ban in the United States. And that sounds like it's going to be a ban unless the company can fend this off in the courts. But I'm not super optimistic about that. So here we are, kind of in the aftermath of a meteorite that I didn't expect to hit for some time.
Yeah, I mean, there's been talk about this for a while. It's not like it's a new thing. We knew it was probably coming, maybe just didn't realize it would be coming now. And the US is not the first country to ban or consider banning TikTok, right? I mean, this has happened. This has played out in lots of different parts of the world. India is probably the most well-known TikTok ban, right? And it's a huge consumer market. And that was like, what, 4 years ago, June 2020.
Oh, June of 2020. Yeah, I thought it was January, but it's still, that's back in the early days of COVID. That's how long ago that was.
Right. So yeah, they banned TikTok there in India 4 years ago, almost. Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Senegal, Somalia, Nepal, well, Iran.
Yeah, actually, when you list out the countries that have done this, it's not actually that attractive of a list. I guess we've joined the party. So Marianne, for folks who are behind, what's the US's impetus here?
I believe it is mostly privacy concerns, right? I mean, there's a lot of worries about privacy, and I don't know if there's any way that could ever be overcome.
I think the privacy is interesting, but how much stock do you put in the argument that there's a propaganda concern of this app being misused by its parent company to essentially influence the American public at large, given how popular TikTok here as a fraction of our population, before and maybe even during an election?
That's very interesting. I had not really thought about that. And I'll be honest, I'm not a TikTok user. I'm just not. I never got into it. I'm not much of a video person in general. I know a lot of people who use TikTok. But do you think that could be one of the reasons why this is happening right now?
I think so. And I think the concern is that the separation that ByteDance has stressed and TikTok has stressed between them is essentially artful BS, that it's not true, that there isn't actually that much operational separation between the two companies. And if that is the case, given the integration of the Chinese government into its major corporations, that means effectively that the Chinese Communist Party has a seat inside of TikTok, which has the heart, eyes, and mind of so many kids and young voters and young adults and just adults. And if that's the case, you have to kind of think, is that a reasonable risk to allow? And one way to think about that is, do other countries allow that risk? For example, does China? And the answer is no. And does India? And the answer is no. And does the EU? And the answer is, well, they're kind of pissed off too. So the answer appears to be no in more places, I suppose.
You know, my brain is just kind of going overtime here. I don't know. In a way, though, that makes me think, like, is that good enough reason, though, to ban TikTok?
Yes. Hard yes.
You would agree. Yeah.
And okay, just to put my priors out there for people, I'm kind of on the free speechy wing of the free speech party. And I know that puts me at odds with a lot of my generational compatriots. But in this case, I just don't think that First Amendment protections apply to Singapore-based companies with Chinese-headquartered parent companies. And I just don't think we have to offer unilateral versus reciprocal access to our market. And so I think the divest or ban is a very reasonable approach.
What are the chances of this happening, though? I don't see ByteDance selling. Do you?
So there was a lot of chatter pre-signing of this and the kind of the accelerated conclusion of this saga that ByteDance would rather shut it down than sell it. That always struck me as a little bit of bravado versus something that was really going to come to pass. I think the question is, what can they carve out and sell that would be enough of an excision or a defenestration of the company from the ByteDance world to placate the American regulatory infrastructure and the government at large? And if there is a compromise to be had in that situation, that would still allow ByteDance to keep the algorithm, the secret sauce of what makes TikTok so popular. I mean, the only thing I know about that is that lawyers are going to be eaten good. And everyone else is going to be up late.
Yeah, super curious to see how all this plays out. I can imagine there's going to be an outcry, though. There's so many people here in the U.S. that use it not just for pleasure, but for business, right? There's marketing, people who use it to try to sell products, creators, influencers, businesses in general who've shifted their ad dollars from Meta and, you know, Instagram or Facebook to TikTok. Like, this has a really broad potential impact, right?
Oh, yeah. But that's the stakes. If it didn't have a potentially broad impact, we wouldn't care about it. Like, that's why we're talking about TikTok. This is not an app that has a million monthly active users in the US. It's not an app that has 10. Doesn't it have something like 130, 140 million monthly active users?
Yeah, it's a lot.
And how many people live in the US, Marianne? 330? That's damn near half.
Half.
Right? Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It has 170 million TikTok users in the US. So that's
so
more than half.
Okay. So yeah. So who's probably hoping that this works out? Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes, because Mark was famously not making enough money over at Meta, and nor is Alphabet doing well enough in the advertising market. I think this is incrementally good for them. I think, wouldn't it help like Snap more than those two companies in terms of like potential growth in the near term?
I forget about Snap, to be honest with you.
Wow. Wow, Marianne. Why are you going to do Evan Spiegel dirty like that?
No, nothing personal, but
I mean, I've never really been a Snapchat user. I think I was slightly too old for it when it came out, and then I wasn't cool enough when it got bigger, but yeah, that's life. But I will say, that is a company that has been tenacious and very vision-driven. And so if anyone's ready to jump on a unlocking of ad dollars, I hope it's them. So they'll give the other social giants kind of a run for their money. It could be good for X, too. I do think, though, that the TikTokification of content will persist, this short-form reels type thing that everyone talks about. I think that's going to stick.
We will see. Well, now I'm curious, since I have event envy, can you tell us what is going on at early stage? Who's there? What are they saying? What's the hot topic besides AI? I mean, I want to hear it all.
Oh, no, you can't say what's the hot topic minus the hot topic.
Well, I mean, you know, we're going to, of course, talk about AI, but like what else besides AI is being talked about?
So we're in Boston, which people will note is not San Francisco and is not New York City. So we are not in the two kind of like apex hubs here in the United States. And I like that to a degree because we're slightly out of center in that way. But the Boston area has a very rich pedigree in software, biotech, a lot of hard tech, given its density of higher institutions of education. You have, you know, MIT is around here and Harvard's around here and UMass Amherst and Williams, maybe, also somewhere around here. I've been in college in a while, so I'm starting to forget.
I don't remember myself.
There's a lot of them. And so it's fun to get here because you do get a slightly more biotech-y, robotics-y type crowd, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of fun. But the thing that's really hit me, Marianne, is we have talked a lot about how venture capital has slowed down and fintech has slowed down. And, you know, the stock market's gone up some, but it's still valuations are low. And if you just like, I mean, honestly, if you just listen to us, you might get a perspective that things are not Leak. Very fizzy,
yeah.
you know?
Right.
But the energy here today, and I'm not just trying to big up our events. I love early stage as an event, but like it's popping. We had a women in technology breakfast to start, and it's been like every session has been pretty much packed with people standing around the edges, and questions have been great. I just got off stage for my two sessions and it was lovely. People were very engaged. And so the biggest thing that I'm taking away from this is, you know, don't worry too much about the big picture numbers that everyone talks about. The founders are still hungry and the founders are still building. And everything else mm-hmm. is just noise.
That's great to hear. There's something to be said for that in-person energy that you feel at that sort of event, especially I think in the early stages, right? Because there's still a lot of excitement, a lot of passion, I hope, for what could be next, what's going to happen. You moderated a couple of panels, right? Tell us about those.
Yeah. So I was on the TAM panel, which is always good fun. I had an investor, Toby from Felicis, and then I had the co-founder of Celino and the co-founder of Quotient AI. Mm-hmm. And they were fantastic. And the questions from the audience were pretty technical, but clearly people are thinking about the best way to put their good feet forward, to talk about their business with investors and raise as much capital as they can. So that was very encouraging. And I think that what's always illustrative to me at these events is how important it is to go over the basics. Because I think that if you've done our jobs as long as we have, Marianne, you get a little bit inured to hearing about pre and post money valuations and this and that. But for a lot of founders, this is the first time they've dipped their feet into this world. And so it's really exciting to see people asking, admittedly, occasionally, a relatively basic question, because it implies an upwelling and a new stream of new founders. So that was good. And then I had Rebecca Lee Whiting from Epigram, and she did our essentially early stage fundraising session, talking about SAFEs, convertible notes. And that was a very good session, once again, for basics, but also for context. And as she put it, it's more of a buyer's market than a seller's market. And that means that the power out there has shifted from founders to VCs. And that yeah. means that you need to watch out for certain terms, certain pitfalls, and certain types of fundraising and so forth. And so it was interesting to hear her strike that tone in a room that was so energetic and so forth. But yeah, VCs have pulled back more than founders, I guess is maybe the way I'd summarize both of those.
Yeah. And I mean, I think clearly we can see that. And it was a founder's market back in 2020, 2021. Obviously, that's changed, I think, pretty dramatically. And, you know, it's tough, right? It's a tough thing for founders in a way. It's like, here we are, we're writing checks. We can't wait to give you money. We can't wait to value you at a really, really high dollar amount. And then to go from that to, so $100 million in revenue. So I don't know. It's like we've talked about it before, sort of a whiplash, but
yes, but it's a whiplash only from the finance side. And I think that's the thing that I'm really stuck on, because the people building stuff are just as busy as ever. I had a little session called Brain Date, which is new to TechCrunch events. I think it's like a third party service. Anyways, it's a way to like set up small chats with people. So I did a brain date with three founders, and I'm not going to go through what each one of them is working on because it would take too long, but they're not slowing down. They're all going straight ahead, thinking about their market, their model, their product. And so, you know, I wish there was a way to like track like founder energy in the same way that we can track venture capital dollars, because I wonder how often those diverge. And that's the venture capital story is just a flawed image of what the market really is.
Very true and very fair. Because I think there's a lot of great startups out there that are probably not even trying to raise venture money, right? Let's be real here. I mean, there are some who've been like, you know what? I've seen what's happened to other startups and term sheets being pulled at the last minute and, you know, fighting for your life as a result. And, you know, I don't want to give up all my equity to an investor that may desert me next time I want to raise money. So, I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to bash VCs at all. I'm just saying that, you know, I think that what has happened over the past couple of years has also just made some people realize, okay, maybe there are other ways to grow. You don't necessarily have to be venture backed to be successful.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, that's actually what the advice that one of my founders in my little session gave to another founder who was thinking about his marketing and go to market motion. He's like, you don't need VC. What you need right now is one angel. And it was really fun to sit there at the table and like listen to them help one another.
That was probably fun. Yeah, that was probably fun.
I don't know, Marianne. I think startups are really cool. And so it's fun to be in a room with tons of founders. I mean, even to this day, after all these years of you and I covering this space, you know that little bit of jazzed you get when you talk to a founder who's really excited about what they're building?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's contagious. I would say probably for me, and I've been covering startups for a very long time off and on, right? Since the dot-com boom and bust. I think the reason I've always still been drawn to covering startups is that they represent hope in a lot of ways, right? Hope for change, hope for improvement, hope for a better world. Let me get, you know, kind of corny here. But, you know, yeah, we've had some bad players. We've had some bombs. We've had a lot of crash and burns, but there's still fundamentally, there's hope that there's a startup that's going to come along and just really change the way something is happening, whether it's a market or the way people are living their lives or medically or whatever. So that's why I love startups.
I mean, okay. So I was on stage with Celino earlier and they won TechCrunch Disrupt 2021, I think, which was a remote disrupt. If you recall, we had to do it that way for a little bit, which was not nearly as fun as doing it in person, let me tell you. Although it was easier on the travel budget. But, you know, so her company won. She's the co-founder and CEO. And it's just like hearing her talk about how we're going to do targeted therapies almost down to the individual level for what works for you and the different bottlenecks they're running into and how they're thinking about their market size. It was a TAM panel after all. Mm-hmm. You couldn't help but get excited about what's going to exist in 30 years or what will become normalized in 30 years when it comes to medical stuff. And that is the power of new companies trying new things.
Right.
I'm leaving here with very little voice left and I'm slightly tired, but I am spiritually kind of
rejuvenated. I can tell. I can see it. That's awesome. That's great. All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there, but don't fear. Equity will be back on Monday. Or let me rephrase that. Alex will be back with Equity on Monday.
It's true.
Until then, you can find me on X at Bay Area Writer, Alex on X at Alex, and Equity under the handle Equity Pod on X and Threads. And don't forget to check out our sister show Found, which dives deep into the stories behind startups with the founders who built them. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Equity is hosted by myself, Alex Wilhelm, and TechCrunch senior reporter, Mary Ann Azevedo. We are produced by Teresa Loconsolo with editing by Kel. Bryce Durbin is our illustrator, and a big thank you to the audience development team and Henry Picavet, who manages TechCrunch audio products. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.